Our fourth case for this morning is Kolofska v. Holder. Mr. Kola.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honors, in this particular case, we're alleging there was two errors committed. The errors with regard to continuance and with regard to voluntary departure. With regard to the error as far as continuance, there's obviously some jurisdictional questions with regard to that issue.
I would appreciate if you would start with those questions.
With regard to the jurisdictional thing, this Court has held in Subhan that this the issue of granting or not granting continuance is something that this Court has the right to review.
Under the circumstances described in Subhan, but why we also have other cases that say we will not look at the granting or denial of a continuance when the result is foreordained to fail. And the immigration judge here said even if there were a visa number available right now, he would still, in the exercise of discretion, deny.
Correct. And that is what this Court has held. And I'm not saying something contrary. What I'm saying in this particular case, we put the cart before the horse in this case. The issue was the attorney went in there with the petitioner and says we were asking for continuance in order to adjudicate this petition and get it properly before the immigration judge. The immigration judge then did this hearing on what happened with Operation Durango, and I'm pretty sure the courts are familiar with Operation Durango, but they did this whole hearing on Operation Durango, and then the immigration judge bootstrapped it and saying, I'm going to deny you a continuance, which, when that happens, it forecloses the person, an individual, from putting any favorable issues before the court as far as discretion.
I don't understand that argument. I mean, the immigration judge, before he rules on the continuance, another way of maybe saying what you just said is he chooses to inform himself more thoroughly about the situation she's in, and it turns out she is one of the people who paid the $5,000, whatever it was, you know, the money for Operation Durango, and so now he's got a better sense of what was going on, and he says, you know, in your case, the time isn't going to matter because I'm not going to use my discretion that way.
But that doesn't give the...
That's not wrong.
It doesn't give the petitioner an opportunity to present a contrary position with regard to discretion.
I mean, the judge just says, you know, there may be some equities for you, but they don't overcome this glaring problem.
But the problem that we have is those equities weren't fully presented before the court. The issue before the court and during those hearings was, what was her involvement with Operation Durango? That's where all the testimony of her entire testimony was, what she did in Durango. The officers came in and testified on what they did in Operation Durango, and that was the sole issue. It wasn't the issue of meriting whether or not she deserves favorable discretion or unfavorable discretion. It was the issue of was she involved in this operation. And, I mean, the facts speak for themselves as far as what her involvement was. But we're saying what the court should have done or what would have been proper in this case is address the issue of continuing the matter in order for her to fully present her case for adjustment of status. At the end of the day, the judge might say, well, listen, weighing all the positives and the negatives in your life, I think what you did in this particular case is so egregious that I'm not going to give you a green card or a permanent resident status. But the judge didn't do that. The judge went through what she did in Operation Durango and then cut off any form of relief. And that is where we're saying there's that fine line of distinction.
I don't remember you presenting that argument to the board. Now, if you thought the immigration judge had pretermitted the proceedings at his level too quickly, that's the kind of thing the board can fix. And so that's the kind of thing you're obliged to present to the board.
Your prior counsel, I didn't represent this district.
Prior counsel, you're stuck with it at this point.
Did not fully articulate that position, but that position was the consistent position throughout the whole proceedings, is asking for continuance so they can present the application for adjustment.
You would need then to show us either where in the board's opinion we can get a glimmer of that, and I'm looking at the board's opinion and not finding any glimmers, or where perhaps in her brief or argument before the board. If she failed to exhaust, then that's an independent reason why we really can't do much about it.
You know, I understand as far as it not being properly articulated at the lower level. I understand that. But the whole...
articulated at all. I mean, where is it that either in her papers, ignored by the board, or in the board's order itself, we see something like the immigration judge should have explored other favorable characteristics of Ms. Pavlovsky before coming to a decision.
What the board says in its decision on page 2 is, we also find no reversible error in the immigration judge's decision to deny the lead respondent's motion for continued to terminate proceedings because her adjustment assessment did not merit favorable discretion. So, in essence, the board is saying that because you engaged in Operation Durango, you don't deserve that favorable discretion.
Right, and that's why I'm saying that if what she really wanted to do was present to the board the argument that you articulated at the beginning, which is to say, yes, there's been a hearing on Operation Durango, but that's only part of the story. I need either a continued hearing or, you know, go on again tomorrow, whatever. I need more time so that I can show you that despite my lapse in having participated in Operation Durango, I am still a worthy candidate for favorable action, whatever that would be, whether it's getting the number on the I-130, you know, visa, or whether it's even just voluntary departure, whatever. I mean, but I don't see the request. And the board is empowered to say, and they do all the time, to an immigration judge, you cut off the hearing too soon. You should have allowed her to explore these other issues.
You know, again, it would have been better if this was presented more properly, more clearly, more succinctly before the board. Yes, it definitely would have been much more better in that regard. But again, what transpired in the hearing and throughout the appeal process is this issue of the denial of a continuance. So inherent in the denial of the continuance is the basis for the continuance. And that is the ultimate issue, is should the immigration judge have continued this matter so that way the issue could properly be before the court. What transpired is the immigration judge went straight to the issue of Operation Durango, which...
Okay, I just have a quick question about the other two derivative petitioners, Bartolome and Simon. They didn't need a continuance. Yeah. How are they involved in this? Because they would have had voluntary departure if they didn't join this appeal.
Their continuance would be their cases for permanent residence rested on their mother's case for getting permanent residence. So the brother applied for sister. And then once the sister's application became current and available for adjustment, they would be able to adjust status at the same time. So if you deny her continuance, you're in essence denying their request to adjustment of status.
Okay. So if you want to save a little time for rebuttal, it's...
Thank you.
Ms. Siegel.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jessica Siegel for Respondent Eric Holder. This Court should dismiss the petition for review because it lacks jurisdiction to consider the agency's discretionary denials of both adjustment of status and voluntary departure, as well as any determination that was made in the context of those decisions. Regarding the adjustment of status issue, under 8 U.S.C. 1252 A2B, which is the jurisdictional provision, under sub 1, this Court lacks jurisdiction to consider any denial of adjustment of status. Under this Court's decision in Leguizamo-Medina, any decision or determination made in the context of a discretionary denial is also unreviewable.
And so your point is, taking the Kukana approach, that these are matters made unreviewable by statute, not by regulation, the sub 2 group.
No, this is actually under sub 1. Kukana only discussed sub 2.
Right.
So under sub 1, and this Court's decision in Leguizamo-Medina, which was unaffected by Kukana, the decision was purely discretionary, and therefore this Court lacks jurisdiction to review the denial of the adjustment of status as well as all determinations made in the context of that finding.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you reconcile Subban with her case?
In two ways. First, under Subban dealt with the denial of a continuance unrelated to an adjustment of status application. It was not the same as in this case, where the denial of adjustment of status was made, and therefore there was no reason to continue the case, as in Pettay and Hassan, two of this court's cases discussing the ultimate hopelessness of an application. In Subban, it was merely the denial of a continuance that would have otherwise led to relief. And the court's decision, the agency's decision in Subban, was essentially, we're just not going to allow this continuance here, period. There was no reason given for the denial.
It would have led to relief, or it could have. The Department of Labor was waiting to, there was the employment certification pending before the Department of Labor.
Correct. And essentially the decision in Subban allows either. Could have led to relief, would have led to relief. Regardless, the agency is required, when denying a continuance in such a situation, to explain the basis of the denial. That's what the Subban exception to the jurisdictional.
And in her case, I mean, her visa date wasn't too far off, right?
Correct.
It was only a couple of months, I thought.
That's possible.
So at that point, you know, she had the approved I-130, and her number would have come up. So why doesn't that look like Subban?
Because it falls directly under Leguizamo Medina and Pettay. And in Pettay, this court found that the ultimate hopelessness of an adjustment application was a sufficient basis in and of itself to deny a continuance.
And so that takes us back to Durango. I mean, it can't be only the fact that the visa number was going to come up. It would have been successful had not been for Operation Durango.
Perhaps there was no adjustment application in the record. There's no indication of whether or not she's otherwise inadmissible for any other potential factors. That was never presented to the immigration judge, even though the immigration judge asked for that application.
So I have a random question to ask you, which is, when Operation Durango was going forward, where did the money go? These people were paying this man who supposedly was a real agent but posing as a corrupt agent $5,000 a pop. And so it wouldn't have taken too long for some pretty substantial money to show up.
I believe it was Detective Beckwith's testimony, and I'm just looking quickly to see if I have the page in front of me where he briefly discussed it. But I believe under there and also under the investigation memos that are in the record, I don't have the detective's testimony page in front of me, but I believe it was his testimony and the investigation memos found at page 444. And under both of those, in both of those cases, that discussed the FBI retaining the money, because it was a joint venture between the INS and the FBI, as well as actually the Social Security Administration was involved as well. And my understanding was that once the cash was given to Officer Robinson, then the money was transferred to the FBI.
And thence to the Treasury. I mean, it's a very shady operation. These poor, desperate people, you know, looking for visa relief who are being preyed on. I certainly can understand using it as a way to snag the brokers, but...
Well, and it was, and it, at no point, in at least evidenced in this record from the testimony here and also in this court's reviewed Operation Durango in at least three other cases, and in those cases it never discussed... that any of the individuals who were paying for the illegitimate visas were ever convicted or charged with any crimes. They were merely placed in removal proceedings, and I think not all of them were.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would only clarify about the children and the sons in this case and the voluntary departure issue.
They're both now beyond the age of minority, right?
Correct.
Well beyond. The other one...
The older one is well beyond. The younger one might be closer, but are no longer minors. But their cases were consolidated because they would be able to tag on to their mother's adjustment, but they would also have to be independently eligible, and that was never determined. But because they, as Your Honor pointed out, attached to this petition for review, they have forfeited that right.
Speaking of other Durango cases, wasn't there one just this week in our circuit that suggests that we would have discretion to review the denial of the continuance? Mosden, I think it is, M-O-Z-D-E-N?
Yes, but and I don't have that case in front of me about the facts, I'm sorry, but I did read it, and And they are distinguishable because of the Pettay, Hassan, Leguizano, Medina issue here, and that purely because that decision under this court's case law was made in the context of the denial of the adjustment application under the agency's discretion, the continuance decision is unreachable.
I see. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Cola?
With regard to Pettay and the other cases, all those cases deal with a statutory bar to adjustment status. Pettay had a criminal conviction in federal court for bringing in prostitutes into the United States. So she was statutorily barred from getting adjustment status. In this particular case, there is no statutory bar. It's purely a discretionary factor. The immigration judge could say, listen, I don't like anybody from Poland.
Doesn't that make it really unreviewable then?
But, Your Honor, in this case, the issue is, did the judge abuse the discretion in not allowing for a continuance in this matter?
Well, no. I mean, the first question is, do we have jurisdiction to review this particular kind of continuance? And you're describing statutory bars, and so it's not in the Kukana group of cases. So we have said that if at the end of the day you have something unreviewable, then you can't review the steps that lead you there.
I understand that part of it, but what the situation is, the issue is they went in and asked for a continuance. The immigration judge, rather than adjudicate the continuance, went to this Durango issue.
Yeah.
And that's where we have the problem with the case. He should have allowed for a continuance in order to format the Subhana issue.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.